Welcome to Who Knew? We're fans of the current series of Doctor Who, where we discuss our likes, dislikes, and insights into this incarnation of the Doctor Who show. Today's episode is called The Unquiet Dead. It aired on April 8th, 2005. It was written by Mark Gatiss, directed by Euros Lynn, produced by Russell Davies, Julie Gardner, Mal Young, Phil Collinson, and Helen Vallis. The show...
Mark Gatiss, yay!
Sure fan. He does Sherlock.
Yay!
Oh. And he's also Mycroft.
That's true.
Oh! There it is!
he was also in an episode of Doctor Who with Martha. We'll do that later. The figures for this episode were 8.3 million viewers in the UK.
So it went up.
Picking back up.
Yep. And they also said that the Unquiet Dead received some criticism from parents who felt that it was too scary for their young children. The BBC dismissed the complaint, saying that it had never been intended for the youngest of children.
Why would children watch Doctor Who?
I don't know.
Why would children be on the Enterprise? Oh, I digress.
Anyway, we're here recording live in Glendale. Glendale, California, that is, where you're 76% more likely to get into an accident collision.
Glendale drivers are the worst.
Hear, hear.
Never heard that before, but okay.
My name is Eugene, and I'll be the moderator for this episode. Here with me is Josh. Say something.
Hello.
Arlene.
Present.
Alburn.
Hello.
Kelsey.
Here.
Brian.
Hello.
And Frank.
Hello, everyone.
Now that you know our voices, well, let's get started.
Yeah, we'll be able to tell right away.
Yeah, this is the third episode, so you people should be used to us by now. this is from IMDb. The Doctor has, for The Unquiet Dead, the Doctor has great expectations, pun intended, for this latest adventure when he and Rose join forces with Charles Dickens. There, see where that went? To investigate a mysterious plague of zombies. All right.
The Unquiet Dead, because The Walking Dead was taken.
Ooh, yes. The Doctor attempts to pilot the TARDIS to Naples in 1860 to show Rose the past, but ends up in Cardiff in 1869 instead, on Christmas Eve. At a nearby funeral parlor run by Gabriel Sneed and his servant, Gwyneth, the corpse of the late Mrs. Peace has been taken over by a blue vapor. She rises from her coffin and kills her mourning grandson before lurching away from the parlor, in which Sneed says, "We've got another one."
Yeah.
I love how this is normal to him. He's not like freaking out, like the
he's
dead
fed
have
up.
Risen.
Oh, here we go again.
He's like, oh, great. Here it is again.
I do think that the zombie people in this episode were creepy as hell.
Yes. Yeah.
That those,
the makeup was great.
Yeah.
The effect, the blue effect around her.
The blue effect was great. And then even just those, that type of contact lens just wins every time. It's just the simplest thing. But then the old lady did a good performance when she walks out the door screaming.
Oh, yeah, that's creepy.
And even
that's
her sitting there in the audience when you just start, when you actually notice her.
Yeah.
Right.
But I love how the cold open is of the Mrs. Peace getting up, and then she's just wailing as she walks right into the camera, and then we cut. And then it's the opening sequence of the show.
Oh, I was wondering why he wanted to go to Naples in 1860. What was going on then? Just my own curiosity, so I looked it up.
It's actually a good year.
So you're answering your own question.
Well, I had to. He was like, we don't know. Let's find out. Was in the in TARDIS when he was talking to Rose. And it was the unification of Italy. And as the liberation of Naples, so that was more in October, but he could be off a month or so. And I just thought it was really interesting. That's where he would be going, you know, to find out what's happening.
He just wanted some good pizza.
There you go. But I was wondering when I watched it yesterday, that is that a typically Napoleon dress? Like she looks like she belongs in London, not in Naples.
Don't quibble. It's what the BBC costume had.
I'm sure the wardrobe person just listening to this
is calling me over in her grave.
But it was a great costume.
A knit. Why?
That's the name of the episode. So I'm just
No, but Rose went and picked her own outfit.
Oh, there you go.
So the doctor didn't give it to her. That's he said, said, go down the hall, make a left.
Make a left, pass the swimming pool.
And she's thinking,
right.
Yeah. And she's thinking 1860s, okay. And that fit where she actually was, mm-hmm. still in the 60s, so.
The costume change is one of my favorite things.
Yes.
As a girl, maybe. Mm. I don't know. But I love cool. it when like they it. Get to do a costume change.
And this is the first
I wish they
time,
did more.
This is the first time Rose changes. Because in the episode Rose and in the episode The End of the World, she's still wearing what she wore mm-hmm. before. Yeah. This is the first time she has a wardrobe change.
And she says to the doctor, well, why don't you change? She's like, I changed my jumper.
Right.
What's wrong with my jumper?
Did he, though?
Is it no, just, I think it's the
still
same.
Burgundy.
just a darker shade.
I'm always surprised that he pulls off that V-neck. It shouldn't work.
So Gwyneth, who works for Mr. Sneed, is a clairvoyant, senses that the corpse is going to see Charles Dickens at a nearby theater. And yes, that's exactly what I would have guessed. In the middle of this of his performance, the blue vapor leaves Mrs. Peace and scares the audience away. The commotion attracts the attention of the doctor and Rose, who rush to investigate.
I like the portrayal of Dickens.
Yes.
He's old.
Tired.
He's spent. Yeah. He's all used up. He doesn't think there's anything new. He's just traveling and repeating his old works. There's mm-hmm. nothing new for him left. You know, it is 1869, and I looked up that he did die in 1870, so they
yes.
got that right.
Yes.
And he actually did do this in
reading.
1869. He did do readings around the country. I don't think he went to Wales. Mm-hmm. But
do you go to Cardiff?
No one willingly goes to Cardiff. but it's just nice to see. He seems very human, very tired, mm-hmm. very old,
yeah.
which fits the episode.
Mm-hmm. Very Ebenezer-like.
Yes.
Yes.
And did yeah. you notice when he was in the dressing room, he was drinking something? Was that just booze, or was it possibly absinthe or...
I didn't notice what he was drinking.
Laudanum, how do you
yeah,
say that?
Yeah, it might have been something to ease
When he was talking to the fella in his room and he was taking his robe off, he was like finishing a drink, and I think you saw him do something, so I wonder if that's documented anywhere that...
Oh, that I didn't read.
That he did take he absinthe
something.
Regularly. Mm.
I also wanted to point out that the doctor does compliment Rose on her wardrobe change, and this shows a little more of the flirty side, maybe, that we mentioned last episode.
It's also showing the growing partnership mm-hmm. between the doctor and
especially
Rose.
Especially in the beginning, because it shows yeah. like the first bit of like daily life for them, where they're trying to fly the TARDIS and it's not working, and they're sort of bickering back and forth. It's not something new anymore.
And but then he's also saying, well, I do this, you know. I'm not sure exactly what he says. But Rose ends it with, it's better with two. Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, that's right. She says, she's asking him, do you do this all the time?
Oh.
You know, is this, you just visit places, you know, this is all new for me, but this mm-hmm. doesn't seem new to you. And he says, yeah, this is what I do. And she says, it's better for two.
Is that when he says, not a bad life? When does he
I think
that?
He might say then, yes. That might be when he says, it's not a bad life. And she, yeah. So they're bonding together.
Yeah. They also... I think it's almost as if they crash the TARDIS because they're like on their backs, right? And
yeah.
they laugh.
Or maybe
yes.
that's why
and they are laughing.
Landing.
Yes, yeah, so they're more bonding. They crash the TARDIS together.
And maybe that's why they landed in the wrong place.
Could be.
Or does the TARDIS always take them where it needs to go?
I think that's the show is so new. I think they're in the classic show. The TARDIS was very uncontrollable.
Oh really?
Yeah. There were I think entire seasons where it was random. There was this randomizer that he couldn't ever turn off.
Did they talk about it then that it takes six people to drive and not...
No. But it was kind of that the TARDIS was old and clunky and never worked entirely
properly.
The Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. So I think this is a little... They still hadn't... They kept that from the old series is what I'm saying. So they kind of get rid of that mm-hmm. fairly quick.
So Sneed and Gwyneth arrive and capture the corpse, but are confronted by Rose and end up kidnapping Rose here as well. Meanwhile, Dickens accuses the doctor of ruining the performance, but after the doctor gushes over... Yes.
about her, Rose getting kidnapped. Like, she only gets kidnapped when she butts in. Like, she's always... What did I...
Like the meme?
She never just gets kidnapped for any reason. She's being headstrong and she gets kidnapped. So
what are you doing with the old woman?
Right, what are you doing with the old woman in the last episode?
Like you're asking too many questions, woman.
Yeah, exactly. So she's always initiating that happening. it's not what I was saying in the previous episode where, oh, the good guy, the, you know, one of the good guys gets captured because that's what we need to happen. Mm-hmm. It's motivated by her character being a Budinsky.
Well, she's a lot in this episode. You see, she's more comfortable in this episode than she was last episode.
Yes.
You know, and I love, one thing that I love is when they realize that they're not in Naples, you know, the doctor has the newspaper and he says, oh, and Rose is just like looking around. She's just thrilled. And he's, and you know, the doctor says, you know, this isn't 1860. It's 1869. And she says, I don't care. And then, you know, he says, it's not Naples. And she says, I don't care. And it's great. And then he says, it's Cardiff. And she's like, oh.
And I just, that's funny because it's just, it's like, if we said, yeah, I ended up in Jersey. Right?
Yeah.
It's not, there's
no, or Glendale.
You don't want to drive through Glendale. But that's the joke, right?
Right.
Yeah. Not being from Britain myself, I had no idea.
Cardiff is kind of, yeah, it's yeah. It gets a bad rap from people.
But it's just a place that,
yeah, I've heard it, like, I've heard it called very vulgar things. It's the something of Europe that's not very nice.
Oh.
So, which I don't think it deserves, but that's
Newark?
The, yeah.
Cleveland?
Detroit.
Detroit.
Plenty of American
analogies or whatever, similarities. Anyway, so Dickens accuses the doctor of ruining the performance, but after the doctor gushes over his literary genius, meaning Dickens's literary genius, Dickens offers to help. At the funeral parlor, Rose wakes up along with the newly reanimated corpses of Mrs. Peace and Mr. Redpath, who I think is the grandson or no?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. The doctor and Dickens arrive and break into the parlor just in time to rescue Rose from the attacking zombies.
What the Shakespeare?
But Rose, I love that, does the classic, let's get the vase, dump the flowers, and throw the vase at the She's not a fighter yet.
Well, I also find it interesting that when the corpses get up, Rose is like, oh, hello, right, as opposed to,
right,
oh, I need to get out of here.
Well, I like that. I like the checking. Are you kidding? Okay, not kidding. This is going to be serious. But then she gets the vase. It's,
yeah.
And earlier on, when he first hears the scream, he says, that's more like it.
Yes, the doctor.
The doctor, like, you know, it's an pursuing adventure.
Just like on the platform one where something goes wrong, he's like, oh, there it is.
There it is.
Yeah.
Things are about to get interesting.
And then when he says, I'm your biggest fan, or one of your biggest fans. There's that whole thing that word didn't even exist back then.
Yeah, he's like, how are you cooling me down, or something like
right,
that.
Right, yeah.
After hearing about the trouble with the corpses, the doctor convinces Gwyneth to help him hold a seance to attempt to communicate with the dead.
And right before that, Rose and Gwyneth have a great scene.
Yes.
And they're, again, Rose is bonding on a human level, or I don't want to.
Or I don't want to say
an individual level, because she does with other aliens as well.
Well, also, this is another person who's like a laborer, a worker, a blue collar person, not
the shop girl of the 1860s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rose trying to find the commonness.
Yes.
Between her and whoever she's dealing with. And I thought it was a great scene, and that also then showed Gwyneth. And how her psychic ability has been increasing over the years. Because she knows and reads Rose and talks about cars and airplanes and traveling even further than that.
And how you walk around half naked.
You would focus on that, wouldn't you?
The darkness inside Rose.
And the bad wolf.
The big bad wolf.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that I noticed at that point as well was that Rose... She says something about Rose. I'm guessing it has to do with the British thing of everyone knows where you're from with your accent. Because she was saying, you speak well, you look well, but man, you are basically a floozy because you talk to people, you're touching people. Like, what's wrong with you? You're not brought up well. There's something about you that's off.
Don't talk about boys.
So that's the thing that's... I felt also in the progression of the episode, her saying, I don't care, or having her attitude everywhere. It just shows that she is an outspoken woman and people aren't used to that.
Yeah. Especially
so
in
now
this time.
We're establishing, not even this time, I feel like all the way through, like she's a busybody, like you said, instead of her being just an outspoken woman, like women should keep their mouth shut. is kind of the thing that they're pushing against in this episode. Like, women are allowed to say what they want, are allowed to be what they want, because in doing that, they're going to achieve great things.
I'd be curious to keep an eye on now, because right now, every time she does something headstrong, like in a good way, she's trying to save someone, she's trying to do this, she gets knocked out. Mm-hmm. Like, at what point do people stop knocking her out? At what point does, like, her headstrongness work and not just render her unconscious?
Well, third time's a charm, right?
Yeah. I think she gets knocked out all the way through.
Yeah.
So while they're holding the seance, the blue vapor fills the room, and it is revealed that they are the remains of the Gelf, a once corporeal alien race until they were devastated by the Time War. They plead with the Doctor to open the rift that exists in the basement of the parlor and allow them to cross over. The Doctor offers the Gelf temporary use of the corpses until he can transport them to a place where they can build new bodies, using Gwyneth as a bridge to cross the rift.
Now, are the Gelf telling the truth?
No.
No.
Well,
no, I think they were. I think they were destroyed in the Time War. Yes, part I think
of,
that's true.
Yes.
They're telling part of a truth.
They're just saying, help us so we can get away, but what they want to do is stay and invade.
Because I always, you know me, I always look at it from a different angle at times.
No.
No. But I'm wondering if they were channeling Gwyneth and reading how to manipulate the Doctor.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, I agree with that. I thought about that at the end of the episode. Like, I was like, oh, they weren't destroyed in the Time War. They were just saying that to manipulate the Doctor to let him sacrifice Gwyneth. Because, like, how naive of the Doctor to be like, okay, yeah, I'll let you come over, you know, just sacrifice this human. Like, and that was uncharacteristic, I feel. Like, I feel like the Doctor should have wrestled with that a little bit more. Like, because he doesn't just throw human life away like that.
Yeah, he wasn't, she wasn't going to die.
Right, and that's why I think it was a manipulation on the Gelf's part, being like, the Doc, you know, like, we need, because that way is almost like, it's the Doctor's fault that they're without a home.
Oh, yeah, because when they do show up, there's a lot more than they said.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, then, yeah, they were lying.
I mean, I do think they're lying, but I don't think they're manipulating the Doctor.
Well, they were lying. They were saying that they were all lost in the Time War, but they weren't.
No, they or said they lost their corporeal bodies in the Time War.
Right, which could be true.
And that's going to be bad for them in the long run, which I think that's all true. Their goal, they lied about. Where it was like, we'll just use the dead bodies, which the Doctor was fine with. And the Doctor even says, it's just temporary. Yeah. I'm going to take you someplace where you can rebuild whatever you need.
You can find a new home.
Yeah, you can find a new home. Because that's what the Doctor does. But the Doctor doesn't think that Gwyneth is going to die in this process.
Do you think that they're lying about the whole Time War? Like, that's not how they lost their bodies?
I'm saying that's possible.
I think so. I think it's a possibility. Yeah.
Because they're using Gwyneth's clairvoyance to see that. And then they're like, oh, we can manipulate this powerful guy.
We also don't know the Time War. This is our first real mention of the Time War. And to me, I don't want our first real, oh, this is a consequence of the Time War, to be a lie.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that the Gelf were destroyed in the Time War, that they even say it's invisible to smaller races, but it's devastating to higher races, which we know is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like, I don't want that to be a manipulation, because to me it's too early in the series.
They're still explaining what the Time War is.
Yeah, I think it's like, this is a race devastated by the Time War, but they're just scum and they're just going to come and take over the Earth, just like the nesting consciousness.
I can see it both ways.
But, yeah, I think if it was later in the seasons, it would have been something. Yeah. Yes. The fact that they're establishing,
they could have played
everything
with it then.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just seeing it this time after she's giving the Doctor the tea the way he likes it with the two.
Right.
And so she's already reading him without even knowing it, how she read Rose. It just, yes, there are alternate theories. And I don't know.
No, it's a good one.
If I totally buy into it, I'm going, wow, they could be manipulating him, because they are manipulating.
They could. Yeah. It could still be the truth. So, they're just making a point to talk about it because they know it's his fault.
Right.
Yeah.
Or I just thought it was an interesting little difference.
It's very interesting. It's not something that I don't think I ever would have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
But I seem to be in the minority with that.
I don't know.
I agree with you.
But then also in that portion right there, what happens is Rose is like, no, you can't take a body. You know, we have to respect them. They're human beings. Right. There was life. And then the doctor brings up, well, are you a donor?
Donor. That's a, yes. That's and, a different morality.
And it's kind of like, it still made me feel icky, though. Like, oh, you can't give someone's body away.
Yes, but, and that's what I like about science fiction, makes you think of things like this. Mm-hmm. Why not? This person's going to die. If they use the body, they don't die. I mean, we'll never have to be confronted with this because there aren't going to be gaseous gelf coming to us. But still, it's just an interesting...
But I think the doctor was so strong in that point was because of his guilt that he's still feeling. I think the ninth doctor completely, his whole reincarnation is so messed up in his brain, and he's feeling so much guilt that this blinded him to...
Oh, yeah.
And Rose is just
I agree.
This Absolutely. New person, and he's like shutting Rose down and not even taking her point mm-hmm. as valid. Yes. Going, no, this is a different morality. I'm doing this. And he's just blinded by that fact.
Absolutely.
To try and save somebody that he could have caused the race to die.
Yes. And but I like that it really was real guilt of his, not a manipulation on his part. But yes, and, he's very much, I'm just jumping into this and I'm just going to do it.
Yeah. What's he's always wanting to save races.
Yes, he's wanting to save everything. Yeah.
Races, so.
But he's doing it blindly in this case, looking at all the different.
Well, it's kind of the first time since the time where it seems, right? I mean, if we're saying this is his new incarnation, and I mean, we're jumping.
Yeah, because the time war just happened.
So maybe this is new-ish.
Yeah, and there are a lot of Gelf. So are children of the Gelf called Gelflings? Dark Crystal, anybody?
Sure.
You're going to have one moment every podcast where we're all going to say, would you like to take that back?
And I'm going to say no.
A segment.
Yeah.
A segment. Would you like to take that back?
You know what? I'm just up at the plate. I'm going to swing at every ball that comes my way.
Yeah, can I, the Gelf?
Would you like to take that back?
Yeah. And they're taking over a body. It's really reminded me of the Star Trek episode. You guys might be able to tell me the name. But,
no.
where the prisoners, I think it was like a penal colony where they
returned
were disembodied. Yeah. And so.
It wasn't prisoners, but yeah, I know what you mean. Okay. Sargon.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that really, like, that's where I was thinking, like, are these guys, like, being punished somehow by their bodies being taken away? And that might work more to the clue of if they are channeling with Gwyneth to read the doctor, like then they would be bad. Because they were bad. I mean, they turned into flames. So they're bad. They're bad.
But not just that. Also, that old woman went to go see Charles Dickens because that's what she was going to do.
Yes.
So they're still kind of themselves.
Yes, they said that.
Or is it a muscle memory type of thing?
No, they said it in the episode that when they came through because of the rift being so, their people are weakened. Mm. The Gelf are weakened and they can't really control the body well. And so there is an essence of the human that was there.
Like a remnant of the human.
And they show it later on in the episode two other times. I think they reference that.
Because when she was reading her mind, she was reading the zombie's mind. She was reading the corpse's mind about where she was going to go.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there is that essence still left. And so they're not completely puppet masters just taking over. And we can get onto it later on. There's two other times where that I think lady. That shows that the human still has some
remnants
part
of their brain.
In there. At least
soul.
Temporarily. I don't know if it's the longer the Gelf will be in you,
well,
then
sort
they
of
take
makes
over
sense
more.
Too, because when at the end, when Gwyneth had already been dead, she was still communicating.
See, that's why I didn't,
Right.
I thought later on.
Yeah,
it's a little.
Seen the show.
No good.
I was just going to say that point, Gwen still being able to communicate, the doctor couldn't even explain that.
Right,
and that's where Charles Dickens had to come in and be like, well, there are things. But that's like a quote
more
of his,
that
right?
Are
no, it's from Hamlet.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
There are more things, Horatio. More. Yeah. That I've dreamt of in your philosophy.
Something like that.
I can't believe I can't remember the quote.
Well, when we get to that point in the story, we'll come back to you.
I need to edit this because I can't miss my Shakespeare.
So Gwyneth stands in the Gwyneth stands in the middle of the arch and opens the rift, allowing the Gelf to cross over. The number of Gelf is much greater than anticipated, and their true motive is revealed. They intend to kill the living to give themselves more hosts and to take over the planet. One of the animated bodies strangles Sneed to death, allowing another Gelf to possess his body.
And that's where he says, I'm part of the Gelf now. So it's talking as the Dr. Sneed.
Yeah.
So
I guess we're not supposed to like him anyway because
he
was being a bit of a jerk the whole episode.
Yeah.
And like covering,
Oh, yeah, we didn't
covering
care
up.
Too much.
We didn't care that they killed him.
Kidnapping Rose.
Yeah. With the chloroform, I think. Early chloroform.
Probably ether.
No. Okay.
You want to go.
Calling them stiffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that's time accurate. But I mean, why wouldn't they?
You had the quote?
Yeah. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. Hamlet.
Act.
One?
Yeah,
Hamlet, Act 1, Scene 5.
Line
167 to 8. Boy, this is really specific.
So, for those out there listening, there you go. Dickens flees
that
the parlor.
That ends today's lesson.
Dickens flees the parlor, and Rose and the doctor are trapped in the part of the basement. Outside, Dickens realizes that the beings are affected by gas and returns to the house. He extinguishes the gas lights and turns the gas on full, pulling the Gelf out of the bodies. The doctor tells Gwyneth to send the Gelf back and to close the rift, but she can't close it or leave. Instead, she takes a box of matches, intending to ignite the gas and kill the Gelf along with herself. The doctor determines that Gwyneth is already dead and that by opening the rift, she has doomed herself. The doctor, Rose, and Dickens flee the parlor just before it explodes and burns. Yes.
So that, I think, is another point that she had enough. I mean, they said that she was dead probably 5 minutes.
But yeah, she stepped into the arch.
But there's enough of her
still left
there
over,
being animated by the guests. But since she was so part of the rift, she had a lot more control over her own body and action.
Yeah, she grew up in the house.
And she's a strong person, I think.
Yeah, but I think because she's already like clairvoyant in some aspects, she could combat like her mind being taken over by somebody, you know?
So, yeah, nobody else, I think, could have been able to
if it was
fight that. It had to
Mr.
be her.
Mr. Sneed in there.
No, it happened with Sneed.
Yeah, because it happened instantly with him. So there is something special about Gwyneth.
And also, before that, all the zombies were, like, coming towards them, and they're hiding behind a gate, and Rose goes, I'm going to die. Is it possible that I can die? Like, I haven't even been born yet. So it's that whole idea of there is mortality. Yes, I haven't really existed yet, but because of this time travel, it doesn't matter. He's like, you could be born in the 20th century and die in the 19th. It's like, you are mortal.
I thought that was a really good piece of writing and enjoyable, but I also, even watching it now, I'm like, well, duh, what'd you think? Like, you're still going, you're still you traveling in time. You think you're...
But I kind of view that as we are science fiction fans, and we've watched Star Trek and
Back
everything.
To the Future.
But yeah, forever. So it's like, yeah. And she's 19. She doesn't look like the science fiction type of person, you know. So
he said it was dangerous.
Yeah, no, yeah. Because that scene still gives me, I still hesitate every time I see it going in the same way, where it's like, yeah. Of course he can die.
It doesn't bother me in the scheme of the show because it makes a good point. It's very interesting. I just feel like she's established as a very smart person for her not to think of that beforehand. But then you don't have that scene, so I don't know.
Well, I think of it more of like someone who's never been to a theme park and they're going on a ride for a first time. And even though it's a controlled ride.
So like, it's actually confronted with it.
It's confronted the whole thing. And they're like, they're on the ride. It's controlled. And they go on. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to die.
Right.
And I'm like, no, you can't die. This, you know, you're strapped in. We have all these things. This is controlled. You're going to be okay. So, you know, I think for her, it was kind of like, oh, this is controlled. He knows what he's doing. Yeah. He's taking care of me. This is going to be fine. I'm going to end up being home because we're time traveling. He's going to travel back, and I'm not going to die. Mm. So
I realize I'm being very nitpicky.
Also, the doctor, too, was like, I've seen all this stuff. And, you know, I've done this. I've done that. And I'm going to die in Cardiff.
All right. So
Dickens is interesting because he's a coward.
Is he a coward?
Well, he just, it's too much for him. So he's like, I'm out of here. And he runs away.
I found that to be very realistic.
No, I know. I'm not saying it's bad, but it's interesting. You know, the portrayal, you know, you have these figures in history that you think are larger than life.
Right.
And this show doesn't write them that way.
But what I like about, I disagree with that because people of this ilk are, you know, they're geniuses. They may be literary geniuses, but their brains work differently. So he's running away, but he's so intelligent that he had the idea to do what he did that saved the day.
Yeah.
So he actually is above it. And
yeah, and comes back in and saves the day, which is great. Right.
And I would almost think when you're in the fire or whatever, when you're in the middle of it, you can't think of anything. You're just scared out of your wits. And as soon as he got away and felt safe, that's when
he could think.
He could think for a minute, and the idea came to him. Like I
almost
feel
he's not running away to think.
No, I know.
Yeah,
well, and it wasn't that he. Well, he realized what was going on when the
no, that's what I mean.
Girls went into the gas, then right. It clicked. But
yes,
if he had that idea in the room, I would have felt like that would have been forced. I felt like that would have felt like, oh, now some you know, oh, Charles Dickens can think under intense pressure. He's a superhero too. You know, no, he runs out of there, and then when he's relaxed, he actually comes up with an idea because he's a genius.
And if he did think of that while in the room, I think he would have stayed and worked
and
on
done it.
He would
yeah.
have done, taken action.
Yeah, I agree.
So it wasn't, I don't know, coward, but it's like realistic. There's nothing I can do.
Well,
I got to get out of
yeah,
here.
Well, plus,
he apologized.
And it was that right. The whole first part of the show is, I mean, you know, he feels like he's worried about being a has-been. He's older and all that stuff. So this was like his turn.
Yes, it is. It is his turn. You know, yeah, and when he's outside, it's his turn.
Yeah, so
he reaches the worst part.
Right.
And flips around. I just like that he reached
yes.
that worst
yes.
part.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
You know, they actually didn't, the writers didn't chicken out.
No, they
you
made
know,
him
the,
a person.
They made him a real
yeah,
person
I mean,
where it's like, no, he, you know, he reaches a point where he's out of here.
That's what I like about this show. When they do use historical figures, they'd make them such real people.
Yes.
Like, almost every time there's a historical figure in an episode, I'm like, all right, how are they going to do this? And then, but I always buy it because I get sucked into their
yeah.
personal drama.
So the doctor, Rose, and Dickens flee the parlor just before it explodes and burns. The doctor and Rose head back to the TARDIS, and Dickens thanks them for their help. He decides to leave immediately for London to patch things up with his family and to finish the mystery of Edwin Drood. The doctor and Rose say their goodbyes and disappear into the TARDIS, and the astounded Dickens walks away through the streets of Cardiff, greeting everyone he passes and quoting A Christmas Carol. God bless us, everyone.
This is almost their first Christmas special.
Almost.
Charles Dickens, Christmas and Ghosts.
But not quite.
Not quite.
Christmas time.
Yeah.
I also like that when the doctor figures out that that's Dickens, he says, I like that story with the ghosts. And he's like, Christmas Carol? No, the other one. And it's The Signalman. It's like, oh, that's cool that you are referencing a different ghost story of Dickens rather than the go-to ghost story. Which is also interesting because A Christmas Carol is probably the first time travel piece of literature.
Oh, really?
If you think
I
about
guess
it.
So.
If you think about it.
I wonder if there's more out there. But
I don't think there's one before that. I think the Christmas Carol is the first time travel is used in a literary work.
Oh, looks like you got your homework for next time.
Also did read that the actor who plays Dickens is a big expert
mm-hmm.
on
really?
Dickens. Yeah.
That's cool.
And so, yeah. And he actually agreed to do the role because he liked the way Dickens was portrayed.
Oh, that's
he liked
good.
Him being older
mm-hmm.
and burned out
mm-hmm.
At the end of his life rather than seeing him in his prime.
Prime, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I bet you maybe that is a little thing about what I was saying before about the drink he was taking. I wouldn't be surprised if the actor brought that to it.
Could be.
Yeah.
Did you notice when he was running away that the gas surrounded the door knocker?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Little homage.
Mm-hmm. Jacob Marley. Anything else?
I like how Dickens was able to just get refreshed again.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everyone is a, you know, go through life. And there's sometimes you're just bogged down and you're like, I'm over it. Like, really just over it. But he was able to refresh himself. And it just kind of shows you that he wrote The Christmas Carol because he felt like an Ebenezer Scrooge. So it was kind of like he felt like that. He felt like he had to go and relive things so that he can move forward and be a better person and enjoy his family and enjoy Christmas and enjoy those type of things. And I think that's what they brought in towards the end by him saying, oh, Merry Christmas to everyone. And just kind of bringing that up and just really relating him to that character. Of course, Dickens' characters are also almost all very dark, but, you know.
I mean, they even have the doctor call him humbug.
Yeah.
He says humbug to him at one point when he's not on board with any of the events that are going on around him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so convinced it's all a parlor trick.
Yeah. I like how at the end, what I've written here, when he says the servant girl that saved the world, no one will ever know
yes.
her name. And that's kind of like what I like about the show in general. Like, until the later seasons,
Nobody knows that this guy is running around the universe saving the universe's, you know, everyone in the universe's lives over and over and over again. He's just this guy walking down the street. No one even, we don't even know his name. Only only Dr. Riversong knows his name.
Yep.
So I like that he was saying that about her, and I wonder if that was just an observation in the writing or if it was they were making a metaphor with the girl and him. That's why I like it.
Yeah, I think there's a parallel there where Gwyneth is like unnoticeable, like you wouldn't blink an eye.
It's funny that it was thinking of time travel, because that's also what I like about the Back to the Future series, even with the cartoons and stuff, that these two guys were running around all over the place all through time, and we're just going to the mall, having dinner, all this stuff. Well, they're keeping the universe together, so it's...
That kind of parallels what Frank and I talk about a lot with the companions,
mm-hmm.
and that when it's well written, the doctor brings greatness out in anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where these people are just people. Usually there's nothing particularly... Extraordinary about
them. Wilford seemed like he was going to be just some old man stargazing.
Right.
Just like at a throwaway, but...
Right. But then it grows and changes in that he brings out the best in people. So, you know, the ordinary housekeeper. No one's ever going to know her name, but she saved the world.
Yeah.
I love things like that. And that's all throughout Doctor Who.
Well, this version.
No, all the doctors, I think, bring out things in their
from
companions.
Their companion. This, I feel like this version with the, I guess the Davies era, focuses on that a little better. Anything else?
I like that we're three for three with explosions in each episode. We had the mall explode, and then the planet Earth, and then...
The mall in the Earth.
Yeah, and then the funeral parlor.
And it was well done.
I like all the explosions.
Yeah, the funeral parlor exploding was good.
I don't have a lot of notes for this episode because I just found myself watching it and enjoying it.
It played on a lot of traditional tropes or whatever, like even the blue gas, the go, everything was creepy. And it should have been creepy and weird and funny when it should have been funny. It was just really well, you know, solid. You got the...
It was moody.
And they really made that moment out of her first step back in time. Even though she did go back and forward in time in the first episode locally, this is the first step she took into history.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were telling me.
No.
I got a kick out of that.
Yeah.
So shall we introduce this to somebody who hasn't watched Doctor Who? Is this the first episode you'd pick, Frank?
The first? I would say no. Unless it's on Halloween and you want something to watch. I think this is a good Halloween episode. But
or a good Christmas episode?
I don't think it would be the one that I would introduce somebody to this.
Okay. Brian?
I don't want to say no, because I feel that there's a string of no's. But I don't think I would with this one. The episodes are there. We'll get to them. I really like this episode a lot, though. This is my favorite of the first three. Because I think it is very moody. It builds its world great.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't think this would be my initial.
Okay. Kelsey.
Yeah, I wouldn't show it as a first. I think it's a little too out there, a little too odd if you hadn't watched any other Doctor Who's. So.
Alburn.
Yeah, I would agree and say not good for the first episode. It's out there, and it also we don't focus as much on the stories of Rose and the Doctor like we do in other episodes. So it's a hard one to be your introduction to this world.
Arlene?
I'm going to be weird, and I'm going to say yes, because it is, I feel like it's a standalone episode. And they don't really have to be connected to anyone or really know the storyline. It's just historical fiction with zombies.
Yeah.
So if you like historical fiction, you'll like it. If you like zombies, you'll like it. If you have anything with sci-fi and you're okay with time travel, you'll like it.
This is a very small audience you are looking at.
I don't know. It's just, I think those are all part of it. And it's just, you know, I showed this one to my cousin first because he likes the creepy factor. And he's like, oh, that's fun. And then he watched the other ones that are more sci-fi, and he wouldn't watch it anymore.
Mm.
So I think if I pull out a couple of the Doctor Who episodes that are like this, he would love it.
Mm-hmm. Josh?
Yeah, I agree with Arlene. I think it's got the elements of like a good bottle show that you could show it to anyone who hasn't seen it before. But if they're more of a sci-fi person, then they may not hook into it. But as a episode itself, yes, but for like general public, no.
I would say yes, just because me personally, I would have gotten a lot of kick out of it as a 10-year-old me. And I remember showing this also to my nephew, and I guess he knew about the Christmas Carol very early on in his elementary school education, and he got a kick out of it. So I think there's enough.
I think
there.
I would have liked it when I was a kid.
Yeah,
knowing about Christmas Carol, yeah. And Oliver Twist.
Yeah,
well, zombies.
Zombies. Well, it's definitely. I think it's a fun show. If someone likes Victorian England and Victorian Cardiff and.
Again, this is a very small audience.
I don't know about that. Yeah. When I was a kid, I liked stuff like that. Oliver was on HBO all the time when I was growing up. I used to watch the heck out of that.
Anything else?
Picking pockets or two.
I don't know. I just think this episode's fun because there's costumes. There's, yeah. You know, there's...
It's a different world.
It's a different world, but familiar. Still a familiar world. Yeah. And there's... Not too much. I wouldn't say that it was all about character development or trying to get the story along. It was about what's happening there. So it's, I feel like a fun episode.
Agreed. We all agree it's fun. Just not one to introduce. The majority is not agreed to introduce this one to a new viewer. So that's it for this episode. You've heard our views. What do you think? Would you recommend The Unquiet Dead to a new Who viewer? And also, do you think the Gelt are lying in order to manipulate the Doctor like Kelsey did? Or are you more like Brian? Do you think that it was that their world was destroyed and they had nowhere to go? Let us know. Email us at whoknewpodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you when the future becomes the present.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Who Knew? Our wonderful theme music is by Michael Grady, and you can find his work at theuniverseexplodes.com.
You can find this show in several places. Follow us on Twitter at Who Knew Podcast. Subscribe, review, and listen to us on iTunes and for our YouTube channel, youtube.com/WhoKnewPodcast.
All our episodes are on WhoKnewPodcast.com. You can leave comments there or email us at WhoKnewPodcast@gmail.com.
This podcast is inspired by Doctor Who, the longest-running sci-fi show in history, and especially the revival spearheaded by Russell T. Davis.
Thanks to Russell, Sidney Newman, Verity Lambert, Ron Grainer, and all those involved in the adventures of our favorite Time Lord. Your work continues to inspire and entertain.